Welcome to Solutions for a Simpler Life. This is Glenda Lehman Irvin with Lehman's on the Square in Kidron, Ohio. We're glad you've joined us. Hello, and welcome to this edition of Solutions for a Simpler Life. Today, we are thrilled to have Carolyn Thomas of Homesteading Family with us. Carolyn, welcome.
Hello, thank you. I'm so excited to get to be here.
Good. Well, I tell you what, just start off telling us a little bit about yourself and your journey as a homesteader.
Yeah, well, you know, for Josh and I, homesteading started long before we even knew the term homesteading. I don't know if it was a thing yet or we just weren't aware of it. But we both grew up having a lot of appreciation for our time in the garden and out with animals that we had with our families. And so when we got married, we were actually living in a city apartment, a second story apartment, and out in the suburbs of Los Angeles, which was very foreign for both of us. We were both country kids. But I was finishing up school and Josh was starting a business. And we had this little balcony and we filled that balcony with plants. And we were so lost without some animals around us that we ended up getting some parakeets. And so we just filled this little apartment as much as we could. And as soon as the opportunity allowed, we moved back out to our hometown area where we only had a little quarter acre in a tiny little house. But we immediately got back to gardening and got into, raising some chickens and some fruit trees and everything that we could do in the space that we had. But it wasn't until we had our first child that we really got serious about our homesteading lifestyle. And we had a moment where we had a medical problem. We were taking our son to the doctor to get his well baby checkups, just like, you know, is kind of standard medical advice. And then following that standard medical advice, we were just following whatever the doctor told us and getting vaccines for him. And we had this moment where the doctor told us that the nurse was going to come in and give the baby two shots. And then not thinking about it, the nurse came in and gave him three shots. And, you know, a lot of times you're just in such this place where you're trusting the expert that I didn't even think to question it at the time. Well, my son had a large vaccine reaction that night. And when I called, they had no record of the third shot. So it was some mistake. And even though I saw it happening, I didn't call it out in the moment. And it really woke us up to go, wow, we've kind of set ourselves in the passenger seat here in a lot of places in life, instead of getting into the driver's seat and really being our own advocates for health, our own, you know, directing the direction of our life and really looking at things. And it made us start looking at things really critically and start diving in and researching and really getting to know, like, what's happening with the vaccines? And is that something that we actually want to do? And is that, you know, what's happening with the food that we're consuming? And do we want to eat the normal standard American diet really anymore? And can we feed our children this? And, you know, what about family structure? How are we raising our children? And these questions really started to swirl around Josh and I. And that really became the beginning of our very serious focus on homesteading, because we decided, no, we wanted something a little different than what we see in the average American culture. We wanted something different in our family, in our relationships. We wanted something different in our health for our children. And of course, if you want to get different results, you have to actually do something different. And not just do the same old thing and expect different results. So we started looking at places that we could really make some changes, and bringing our food production and our cooking back down to the kitchen really became basic in this journey. Like, it became very, very foundational, maybe I should say, in that what we were putting into our bodies, what we were putting into our minds became very important to us. So we actually did a few things. We got rid of the television in our house. We, we started like looking at things and going, no, I don't think we want that, but instead we want this. We started working together on family projects, including our children with us as our family grew. But we really dove into starting to grow our own food and really starting to cook from scratch, pretty much everything that we grew. From there, we just kind of started expanding and we got onto larger property. So we had more space for gardens. Then we could raise some livestock and really participate in other projects because we had a little bit more room. And so it kind of just grew from there. But the interesting thing for us is that people started to notice a difference between our family and our life and their life. And they kept coming to us and asking us, what are you doing that's different? And so we really developed a heart to share. And it became our intention just with our property. We would have a lot of people over and have a lot of meals with people and just share what we were doing. And then, of course, eventually that grew into sharing online as I started getting so many phone calls asking me questions about things that I thought, oh, as a mom with all of these little children, I do not have this time to be on the phone. So I finally picked up a video camera or a phone back at that point and just filmed myself answering a question that I had been asked like 10 times in the last week.
What was that question? Do you remember?
Actually, how to de-stem elderberries in an easy way, because they take so long. If you've ever done that and you want to process a lot of elderberries, it takes forever. And so it was like the quick way to de-stem elderberries. And so I filmed what I was doing. And every time I got asked that question, I could just send the video to a new person who asked me that question. And it really opened up this idea that, you know, I could be sharing and I could be helping a lot of other moms who are asking all these same questions, but they don't have anybody to turn to. And that's something that I really found in my journey, is that there was a lack of other people who knew what they were doing and who were willing to share. I couldn't find them at that point. You know, now we've got a lot of maybe homesteaders on YouTube. We've got a lot of blogs. At that point, that didn't even exist. And the ones that were there, we kept finding maybe they were sharing their journey as they learned, but they didn't have the tried and true methods that they'd lived with, you know, for years and knew worked really well. You'll know that, Glenda, living in Amish country, you've got... People have been doing these things for generation after generation, and they've got some pretty tried and true methods. For us in Southern California at that time, that there were not those people around us. And so we were really having to learn ourselves by trial and error. And we wanted to shortcut that for a lot of people and help them as we develop these tried and true methods that we'd practice year after year, really help people be able to shortcut right to those methods. And so that really turned into the creation of Homesteading Family and the ability to share with more people and help more people.
Well, and I love that. Not only are you participating on your journey, but you are willing and able to educate others. I know I get your daily blogs and they're always interesting, whether it's about sourdough bread or chores on the farm. You've mentioned your children quite a few times. Tell me, how many children do you have?
We have 11. 10 are our biological, and then one is a nephew of ours that we've adopted, and he's a perfect fit into the family. And So there's 11 of them. The oldest is now moved out, just married, and they're expecting their own first. Oh, fine. And the youngest is a baby. He's one. He just turned 1 year old this month. So it's a large family. There's a bunch of us. We also have a lot of family and friends around. So we often have 15 people at our table for meals. So.
It sounds lovely, but it also sounds very difficult to make a meal for 15 people from scratch 3 times a day, every day.
It definitely requires a very different paradigm of how you do life, I think, than your average American, you know, just run to the grocery store and grab something really quickly. And, you know, it has a little more of the slow food model, but it does require quite a bit of planning on our part. We need to make sure we know what meals we're having for the whole week and if they require any special prep steps, to be aware of that ahead of time so we can put that into the schedule and make sure those are done.
Yeah, I know you and Josh both like to involve the children, probably not the baby just yet, but involve the children and assign chores. I've read a lot about your organization methods because you get an awful lot done. And so can you talk to us a little bit about how that all came about, getting the children involved, being organized? You have a lot of systems. You have a system for the livestock. You have a system for the meals. And I think that makes you much calmer and happier.
It does. I think it makes everybody calmer and happier because everybody knows what they're supposed to be doing and when they're supposed to be doing it. And they all know when they have free time and downtime and what they can look forward to. So that's really helpful. But yeah, you know, this started really early for us. Josh and I, as very young parents, started noticing how many children, I don't know if this is true in your area, but definitely we've seen this in large cities on the West Coast. How many children, even as they were getting up to 5, 6, and 7, when they were out in public, were being pushed around in a stroller, and they were entirely isolated from what was going on around them. They were not helping to shop at the grocery store or helping to do these things. They weren't learning anything. They were just a little passenger in their own little stroller kind of pod. And, you know, nowadays it's even worse. Now they're all on devices at the same time. And so they're completely isolated from the experience. And so Josh and I made a very intentional decision really early on that we were going to what we call slow down and let them walk. And that was our little phrase that we would use to encourage each other when we'd see, you know, that anxiety of like, I've got to get all this done. I've got to send the kids away somewhere else so I can accomplish all these things. We'd say, slow down and let them walk. And our goal was to do less if we needed to, but slow down to a pace that we could include the children and what we were doing so that they were very familiar with it. So they were learning skills as they went, but also so that they were learning fellowship during work. That's something we're not good at in the modern culture. And it's something I've struggled with. You know, having friends over to work on something is very hard for me because I want to stop and give them my full attention and talk just to them. And it's hard for me to work and talk. And I think that's a skill that we need to learn again so that and work corporately. And so it was really important to develop that with our children, that right away they were able to work alongside of us. So with that, we started really developing systems that started with having the children involved in a very early age. At 2 years old, they start doing their own chores. And I say that kind of lightly because, you know, nobody's accomplishing very much at 2 years old, but they are learning to show up. They are learning that, you know, we get up in the morning and we do what we have to do. That's just what humans do. And we don't need to argue about it. We don't need to be like, oh, I don't want to do my chores. It's just what happens and it's normal. And so at that age in our house, they're usually sorting silverware, you know, putting the clean silverware away. And so it's kind of preschool and chore training all wrapped into one, but they're in the kitchen where a bunch of other people are and they're, you know, getting a lot of encouragement and a lot of cheering on when they do it well and a little bit of reminders of, no, we have to finish this, come back and let's get it done, you know. And that just starts to develop into this heart to participate in the systems in the household, which is really important, I think, to develop at a really young age, the participation in the household. And so we've taken that and we've created different times of the day where we do different types of chores and made them very systematic, where everybody knows exactly what they're supposed to be doing and when. And something that I believe in very strongly, I never wanted to be a nag. I never wanted to be the one that was like, oh, have you done your chores yet? Have you done your chores yet? You got to do your chores. You better go do your chores. Like, I do not like it when people do that to me. And I certainly didn't want to be the one to do it to somebody else. And so, so what I did is decided instead of me being the nag, I'd let the household schedule be the nag. And so we arrange all of our chore times to be immediately before either something fun or a mealtime. So the policy is, hey, you know what you need to do. You know what time you need to do it in. We all know that it's a reasonable amount of work for the amount of time that you have, but you don't get to eat breakfast until it's done. It's just the rules around here. You know, it's what we do. Mom and Papa don't eat breakfast until it's done. The kids don't eat breakfast until it's done. And so by doing that and setting those clear expectations, I don't have to be the nag because they have to come to me and tell me when their chores are done. I have to inspect them, and they just can't have the meal or the fun time or whatever it is until they've gotten it done. And let me tell you, if you actually stand by that, that works very quickly and very effectively. We have maybe had two people have to skip a meal in all of our parenting time, two different meals, because it's like they see that happen and they know right away. They see their sibling go through it and they're like, oh, dude, that's for real. I don't want to do that, you know? And so creating those systems where everybody knows what they're supposed to do, when they're supposed to do it, is just so important. But then giving them the motivation to do it, and then backing up and letting them take responsibility for actually getting it done. All of those things go together to create a lot of harmony in the household schedule.
I don't know how familiar you are with the Amish and how they raise their families, but it reminds me very much of that. It is just known that everyone has their role. Sometimes the older children take care of the younger children. It tends to be very typical, which the young girls work inside the house and the young boys work outside the house. I think that's changing a little bit now. But it, like you said, it's expected. It's known. It's not something to be complained about or fussed about because it's just what you do. And the vast majority, I'm not going to say all of them, but the vast majority live without electricity. And so they don't have televisions or phones or some of those other distractions too. And I think there's a real sense of accomplishment from being productive, even if it's just making your bed in the morning or watering the chickens, or, you know, you did something that made you feel productive and you made a difference to society. So that's wonderful. Before I forget, how can people follow you? Like I said, I signed up for your emails and you have your YouTube channel. You have a digital magazine. I know you have lots of other venues. How can people follow you?
Yeah, if you go to homesteadingfamily.com, you'll be able to find all the different ways. We're on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, kind of all over the place. Rumble if you don't do YouTube. And yeah, you'll be able to see everything that we do. We have all of the classes that we teach, including household management, just on these topics, are all listed on that website, along with a lot of information on the blogs and, you know, other resources that we have there.
Yeah. One of the things I think you had mentioned, Josh came up with it. He lists out daily chores, weekly chores, monthly chores, seasonal chores, annual chores. And I didn't have a homestead growing up with my children. They're young adults now, but I thought, you know, that's a really good way to look at it, because if you just look at all the things that need to be done, it can be overwhelming. But look, hey, we only do this once a month, or we only do this in the spring and the fall. And then setting expectations, right? Like you're saying, they know it's not a surprise. They don't wake up in the morning and you're nagging at them, oh, do this, do this, do this. And so I love that. What is the most difficult thing about your lifestyle? And conversely, what is the most joyful?
Ooh. Okay. I think they may actually be the same thing, which obviously, like that, those things go hand in hand sometimes. Challenges often produce joy. But I think the seasonality of the homestead, just when you feel like you're getting comfortable with what you're doing right now, everything needs to change. All of our chores change. We're here in the very far north of Idaho, so we have very distinct seasons. We have, you know, a very clear fall, which is really punctuated by harvest season and butchering and everything with the hunting, all the things there. Winter for us is long and cold and covered in snow. You guys are probably similar out where you are. And it becomes a real season to focus on organizational things, on homeschooling, on, you know, other more inside type projects. Then we have what we love to call out here a mud season in spring, and where, you know, everything changes. And Josh said it yesterday. He says he feels like we're almost there right now here in North Idaho as we're recording this. But he feels like there's this growing anxiety inside of him. Like one day we're going to go like those racehorses in the gate. All of a sudden the gate's going to open. It's going to be like, go as fast as you can, you know? But right now we're still kind of in a little bit of a lazier, slower winter pace where it's kind of all the animals are still in the barn. The feeding's really easy. We don't have anybody out on pasture that needs to be rotated right now. There are no gardens. The milk cows and the milk goats are all dry. Like it's pretty slow at this moment, but it's going to turn on and get really fast. And then of course we have the summertime and here they feel very short where we have, you know, significantly warm days. So there's a lot to pack into summer. So I guess it's that the change of everything constantly. In some ways, it is very hard because it creates, you know, you have new menus. If you're eating seasonally, your whole menu changes constantly. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of change that you have to keep up with. But at the same time, I do get bored easily. So on the other hand, I love that, you know, it's like, oh, if I'm getting tired, we're working really hard out in the garden or it's harvest season and we're just working, bringing in all that food and preserving it. Then we always look ahead and go, oh, those long, you know, those winter days by the fire where we're reading books together and doing school. Like it's always something to look forward to. And I think inherent in all of that for me is the working with the family and the changing of those seasons with the family. That just brings so much joy.
Oh, that's lovely. Thank you for spending time with us. I have one final question. I know you do an awful lot on your property, but do you have one thing on your homesteading bucket list that you would like to do?
Yes, bees. We would love to keep bees. Josh and I have wanted to do this for a long time. The property we moved up onto is very isolated right now. We're in a very small river valley, and there's not a lot around us. But it just so happens that one of the local professional beekeepers lived on this property back in the 70s. And he just said he tried and tried and there just wasn't enough bee food here. We don't have enough flowers. And so for the last 5 years, we have been developing, you know, there's now clover everywhere. We're more fruit trees and what can we have for spring and for the summer dearth and all those things. So we've just been adding bee food to the property left and right. And I think we're at a place where we can this year or next year, maybe start with bees. And I'm really excited about that.
That is wonderful. We will have a guest on in April, Sarah, a local person that raises bees, and she gives a lot of tips. And we'll also have a content on our website at blog.laymans.com about beekeeping. I think bees are fascinating. They're very intelligent. They're very organized, which you should appreciate. And I wish you luck with that. Well, thank you so much, Carolyn, and enjoy the time spent with your family.
Thank you so much, Glenda.
This is Glenda Lehman Irvin with Laymans, where we stand for a simpler life. Thanks for listening. For more, visit laymans.com.